Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Trim Radio Network, where we broadcast live all over the world. You come on over to the Trim Radio Network. You can listen in. You can buy merchandise. And if you want to be a part of our Trim Radio Network team, it's so easy. All you have to do is message us. Now, the opinions expressed by our host, co-host, guest, myself, and others is not necessarily that of the Trim Radio Network, its owners, managers, or others. And any information shared by us is not to be considered to be used as advice. We inform, we don't advise. Anyway, that includes any medical and health professional information as well. Anyway, this song right here, well, this is Fighting For Me. And I'll tell you what, that's by Riley Clemens. And welcome to the first show right here of Life Walk with Christ God. And we also do have a call-in number, 803-866-1667. And you call in, you know what, you can add to the conversation, you can give us your opinion or whatever. The only thing we ask is that you don't cuss and you don't swear. So other than that, you get to sit back, enjoy the show, and hopefully it's a good one for you, because this is new for me. So I'm looking forward to it. And with that, we are going to get started. You know, we have a lot of things going out there in the world today, and it's a very, very difficult time for a lot of people. It's a very scary time, and, you know, hopefully we can kind of get through all this together, and that's one of the most important things that we can try to do. Anyway, I'll be reading from the King James Bible, King James Edition, and I want to try to take you through some of the different obstacles when we think life is so bad, and, you know, it gives us a chance to examine it to how it was today compared to how it was yesterday, and imagine the worst things and the best things possible. And the only thing I can do is encourage you to read and make a difference in somebody else's life, make a difference in your own life. And I think it's, you know, going through the struggles that I did, not having answers that I wanted, and going through the struggles of today is a very scary and, you know, can leave us with a very bleak reality. But at the same time, there's hope, you know, and that's one of the most amazing things. And I was neglecting myself to see all the different gifts that really are here, all the good things in the world. We tend to focus on anxiety. We tend to focus on worry. We tend to focus on things that are so far beyond and out of our control instead of laying them at the feet of Christ God, which has made all the difference in the world, which is definitely has changed my life in the last 3 years. And, you know, I'm blessed. Extremely excited, extremely blessed now, because I didn't have an answer before to where I have an answer now. So we're gonna take a look at some of the things. I apologize for that. We're gonna take a look at some of the things that happened back then. And I'm not starting off at the beginning. I'm gonna be jumping around to make it easier to tell some of the different stories, some of the greatest stories. In the Old Testament and the New Testament, and join in, you know, I hope that it 1 hour of peace and enjoyment that we could talk about, and hopefully it will bring you some comfort. Hopefully it will bring you some peace. And I could tell you, it's not one of the first things that I had to learn was my relationship with God was all wrong. It was completely wrong. I had a bad concept of it. My problem was I was, and it's with so many of us. We get caught up in this world and everything that's going on in our lives and our kids' lives and our families' lives. And one of the things that I realized was, is that I was having a relationship with God, but on my terms. And I don't know if many of you can relate to that, but the fact was, for me, was I was saying, okay, I believe in you, but I'll tell you what, I've got time for you from 9:30 till 10:30 on Sunday, maybe 11, and then during the rest of the week, you know what, just hang on and you know, I'll call you if I need you. And that's really how I was living my life. And the older you get, and with so many lessons and so many heartaches and hurts, a lot of us have been through a divorce, a breakup. We've seen death. We've seen so many tragic things happen that we forget, you know, every footstep that we take, everything that we do in this life, there's a purpose for it. There's a reason for it. And hopefully, you know, ultimately in the end, before we leave this world, we make the one choice that is a decision that's really led up to it. From all the different things that have happened, will lead up to this decision at the end. And that's your free will. That's the free will, but you do have a choice. And I'm not here to convert you. I am not here to, you know, tell you that I know the way, because I don't. But I can tell you that the different things that have happened in my life that have brought me to where I am at this point, and hopefully I can share those things with you, and now I can relate those things with you, as things really haven't changed as much as what we believe in this world compared to where it was 2,000 years ago. It's unbelievable, the different tragedies, the different things that were happening in the world, the injustices, the terrible things that were happening. And truly, as we go through, and hopefully we take these steps together, we can talk about it. And anyway, without much more talk, let's just get into it. I'm going to go right to an important book that everybody probably recognizes from the Bible. And the reason that I wanted to go through this book, because I want you to relate today. If you're in the worst spot that you're in, okay, and you think that life is unfair, you think that there's no way out, there's no chance, be it whether you're stuck on drugs, be it whether you're homeless, be it whether, you know, you're looking at homelessness, or there's no food on the table, or anything else. I want to go back and I want to tell this story. And everything in the Bible, as far as I'm concerned, is absolute truth. So, but that's my choice. You have to take from it as to what you want, okay? You believe what you want. And like I said, I'm not here to change anything for you. I'm just here to tell you the truth of what I've come to know as the truth. So we're in the book of Job, the circumstances of Job, chapter 1. There was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job, and that man was perfect and upright, and one that feared God and eschewed evil, fled from evil. And there were born unto him 7 sons and 3 daughters. Now, as you relate this to your world, we all have kids and everything else. Can you imagine that? 7 sons and 3 daughters. Whew! You'd be lucky if he had hair on his head, especially in today's world. His substance was also 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, and 500 yoke of oxen, and 500 she-asses, and a very great household. So this man was the greatest of all men in the East. And his sons went and feasted in their houses, every one his day, and sent and called for their 3 sisters to come and eat and drink with them. And it was so, when the days of their feasting were gone about, that Job sent and sanctified them. He rose up early in the morning and offered burnt offerings according to the number of them all. For Job said, It may be that my sons have sinned and cursed God in their hearts. Thus Job did continually. God came to present themselves before the Lord. And of course, before this happens, you have to understand, because a father always worries about his children, and a mother will always be a mother. It doesn't matter how old your kids are, and you know this. Everybody out there knows this. You're a parent, and you're protective of your kids, and you want what's absolute best for them, and you're not going to settle for anything else. You want what's best. Job was so worried and feared God so much, he didn't want God to do anything bad to his kids because maybe they cursed God or didn't do right. So Job would go on out, and he would sacrifice an animal, oxen, whatever, for each one of the kids, okay? A forgiveness, an amendment, okay? Just in case they did something wrong. Doesn't mean that they did do anything wrong, but just in case. That was Dad protecting his children. So, now here we go. This is the first assault of Satan. And of course, we're in chapter 1. Here we are at verse 6. Now there was a day when the sons of God, when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan came also among them. And understand something. Satan can't just go right on up to God, okay? Angels are there. Understand. They're there, and before, you know, they come in and present themselves to God, and Satan was along with them. So I'm sure that they met him first before he got anywhere near. So let's just move on from that. And now we're on verse 7. And the Lord said unto Satan, whence comest thou? And Satan answered. And Satan answered the Lord and said, I am going to and fro in the earth and walking up and down in it. That's what he does. He goes to and fro. And the Lord said unto Satan, has thou considered my servant Job, that there is none like him in the earth, a perfect and an upright man, one that feareth God and escheweth evil? Then Satan answered the Lord and said, doth Job fear God for naught? Has thou not made a hedge around him and his house, and about all that he hath on every side? Thou hast blessed the work of his hands, and his substance is increased in the land. But put forth thy hand now, and touch all that he hath, and he will curse thee to thy face. So understand, God already knows why Satan has come there. He knows everything. He's omnipotent. He knows every single step, everything in this world, before we even do it. He knows the same thing with Satan. Understand that. Satan comes to him. He knows exactly what he's doing. He's testing God. He's tempting God. He's causing trouble because God already knows why he's there. He already knows. So that's the first thing that we should understand. But God is feeling him out. Let's go ahead and, you know, not even feeling him out. He already knows, but wants to hear what he's going to say. But put forth thy hand now and touch all that he hath, and he will curse thee to thy face. And the Lord said to Satan, behold, all that he hath is in thy power. Only upon himself put not thy hand. God basically just told him, you think so, and you think that if everything's taken away from him, he's going to curse me. You could do whatever you want, but you will not lay a finger on Job. Now see, there is the power right there of Christ God. Okay? Satan isn't allowed to touch Job, and he knows it. At no time is he allowed to touch Job in this part so far of the book of Job. He's not allowed to lay a finger on him. He's given a commandment to the devil, to Satan. He says, you will not touch him. So Satan, you could already tell, is beneath. He will never be equal to. God said, you won't do this, that's that, and that's how it's going to be. And a lot of people, I think, miss that. Okay. Now we're on verse 13. And there was a day when his sons and his daughters were eating and drinking wine in their eldest brother's house. And then came a messenger unto Job. And let's make sure I've got this so I'm not skipping ahead. And the messenger came and said, the oxen were plowing and the asses feeding beside them. And the Sabaeans fell upon them and took them away. Yea, they have slain the servants with the edge of the sword, and I am only escaped alone to tell thee. So now Job has already felt the first pain of what has happened. It's not God who did this. Okay? God's not taking everything away. You know, the devil said, well, if you take everything away from him, he'll curse you to your face. But remember, Satan was the one that came and said that to God. But God's not doing it. Satan's doing it. Here we go, verse 16. While he was yet speaking, there came also another and said, the fire of God has fallen from heaven and hath burned up the sheep and the servants and consumed them. I am escaped alone to tell thee. While he was speaking still, there came also another and said, the Chaldeans made out of three bands and fell upon the camels and have carried them away, yea, and slain the servants with the edge of the sword, and I only am escaped alone to tell thee. While he was yet speaking, there came another and said, thy sons and thy daughters were eating and drinking wine in their elder's brother's house. And behold, there came a great wind from the wilderness and smote the four corners of the house. And it fell upon the young men, and they are all dead. And I only am escaped alone to tell thee. Then Job arose and tore his mantle and shaved his head, and fell down upon the ground and worshipped and said, naked I came out of my mother's womb, and naked shall I return thither. The Lord gave, and the Lord hath taken away. Blessed be in the name of the Lord. Here's a man that had oxen, camels, sheep, everything taken away, his servants slain in the middle of the field. Then his children all together, while celebrating and eating and drinking wine, all perished at one time. At one time. And he's getting this news, one right after the other, after the other, after the other. And we talk about the things that we go through today, and we look at our lives, and a lot of people have witnessed, gone through all these trials and tribulations of life. I've seen it. I've lived it myself, not to the extent of Job. Few do, but we have seen it. In Columbia years ago, we had I believe it was here in Columbia, somebody that just inadvertently drove down the wrong side of the highway and killed a whole van full of people hitting them head on. We see these things, and we can only imagine the pain of what our loved ones go through. It's unbearable. It's unbearable. And we struggle to try to find answers for reasons why. And the first people that we blamed, and I did the same thing myself when my father had passed away, was I was mad at God. I was mad at God. I felt betrayed because my dad was taken from me and I was so young. And I was so selfish about it, I didn't even think about my younger brother, how he must have felt at that time. I mean, we forget about these things. We're angry. We're mad. We're confused. We're sad. And then 2 years later, my brother Tom was killed. Again, I was really angry. Vicious anger. You know, just hurt. And that hurt in our bodies, we're not used to that. It's fragile upon us. And we see the atrocities of today. We're watching this war in Ukraine. But ask yourself, you're not involved in it, right? So how many people really have the feelings for it? It's wrong, war, whatever, protesters or whatever. We're giving all this money to Ukraine, and Russia's done this, and who's evil, who's not evil, and, you know, we're making these judgments, and nobody's thinking about all the lives that are being taken every single day. And here's Job, an upright man in God's eyes, which none of us are. And none of us in this world can be. We're not even close. But Job is a man that prayed every day and wanted to make sure his children were safe and went ahead and sacrificed an animal to God to make sure, hey, listen, I just in case they did something wrong. Not that they did do something wrong, but just in case. So that he could make it right with God. Because he was so afraid of God, but love God so much at the same time. Isn't that the same thing as parenting? If our kids act up, we want them to understand, spare the rod, spoil the child, right? We want them to understand, hey, listen, you mess up, you're going to fear me. But at the same time, I will love you right down to the deepest part of me in my heart. But I will hold you accountable for when you misbehave and you do the things that you do. That's exactly how Job was. And it's not that his kids misbehaved, but just in case. And none of this would have happened if Satan wasn't looking to do what Satan does. And we already know what Satan does. He comes to steal, to kill, and to destroy. And there's a reason that it's in that order. If you pay attention to it, what has Satan done? Exactly what has he done? And what has he accomplished from doing this to Job? Well, first of all, he's stealing. He is stealing Job's joy. He's stealing that joy from Job with his kids celebrating and enjoying their prosperous life that God has blessed them with. Why? Because Job was an upright man. And then what did he do? He killed. He killed all the servants. He already stole all the animals or killed them. And then he destroys the same way he killed his sons. And then the destroy part. That's the backbreaker. That's the part that breaks everything inside of you that you've lost every single thing you think. And we've all been to that point. But it's not God who did that. It was Satan who did that. God just said, you're not going to touch Job. You're not going to kill him. You're not going to do this. So it's not God doing that. And you have to be asking yourself at this point, what is the point of this if God is allowing Satan to do this? And we're going to get to that part. So let's continue on. So we're at verse 22. In all this, Job sinned not, nor charged God foolishly. Everything that's happened to this man, every single thing that has happened, and not once did Job curse him. Now, as we live our lives today, and you might think that I'm wrong and disagree with me, and very few people in this world, doesn't apply to everyone, but when something bad happens, we're the first ones to blame God. We're the first ones to put blame on Christ God. My perfect example is, and I felt this way myself. I'm guilty of it, just like everybody else. I'm battling lupus, and now it looks like a blood disorder that's leukemia, and some, believe it or not, mental health issues, which if most of you know to believe that. I've seen things in my life that I shouldn't have to see. Experienced some things in my life that no one should have to experience. But it's no different. I can't say that my things that I've gone through are any worse than the things that you've gone through. And yet, the first ones we always blame is God. And now I have people come up to me now, you know, aren't you angry? Why would, you know, if God were real and God existed, why would he allow little children to develop cancer? Why would he allow little children to be taken away and sold? Why would he allow the injustices of the world? Why would he do all these things? Why would he allow people to die in car accidents and drug people, you know, drug dealers to thrive and all these people, these abductors, living these posh lives? Or all the people that are in power that are just greedy? Why would he allow all of that? And why aren't you angry at him for giving you the problems that you have? And my answer will always be the same. God didn't give me those things. What he did give me was how to handle those things. It's free will. He's not the one down here walking to and fro through the earth or having his little minions go out there and cause trouble. That's the person who steals, kills, and destroys. Those things happen so that we put the blame where the blame doesn't belong. And then we blame God. See, Satan can only be at one place at one time. God, he's everywhere. He's outside of space, time, and matter. He's everywhere, all the time. And I think that we need to remember that and to understand this isn't exactly the way it looks. People see it on video. They see things on video and everything else. Oh, no, I saw it from my own eyes. Really? Can the video lie? It sure can. We've seen it. Because sometimes we don't get the full video. We don't get the full view. We don't understand the full perspective. But we do hear in Job, he lost everything. everything. And yet, in all this, Job sinned not, nor charged God foolishly. That to me is incredible. I failed at it miserably. And maybe you failed at it miserably. But that's some of the mistakes that we make. But let's read on. Chapter 2. The second assault of Satan. Again, there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan came also among them to present himself before the Lord. See, you don't just go on in there. A lot of people are like, you know what? When I get on up there to God, when I die, I've got a lot of questions for him. I'm going to ask him a lot of questions. You think so? Let me tell you what you're going to do. First of all, you're going to fall flat on your face. You're not going to say a word because his power and everything else, he already knows what questions you think you're going to ask. Those, he already knows. That's already been answered. You just don't know it yet. You just don't know it. Satan is the same way. He can't just go and start asking questions and present himself whenever he thinks that he wants. It doesn't work that way. Omnipotent, one place at one time. That's just how it is. Satan is weak. He's nothing compared to Christ God. And it shows it and says it. And we can go right back to that, where he says, and this is chapter 2, when his sons presented himself to the Lord, and Satan came also among them to present himself before the Lord. He's got to present himself, okay? And the Lord said unto Satan, and this is verse 2, chapter 2, whence comest thou? And Satan answered the Lord and said, from going to and fro in the earth, and from walking up and down it, in it. God already knows what he's doing. God already knows where he's been. He knows exactly where he is. He knows exactly what he's doing. But he's asking him the questions anyway. Because he knows what Satan's doing. He knows that Satan's tempting him. Satan is trying to, you know, disprove him and everything else. Because we know that Satan wants power. Satan just hasn't figured out he doesn't have all that power. But he has to present himself to the Lord. He knows, but he's still going to do it because that's what he does. And the Lord said unto Satan, verse 3, chapter 2, hast thou considered my servant Job, that there is none like him in the earth, a perfect and upright man, and one that feareth God, and escheweth evil? And still he holdeth fast his integrity. Although thou movest me against him to destroy him without cause. Basically, it's not that God did it. God just let it happen. It was allowed to happen. Satan's the one who does it. But God, because Satan said he put up a hedge, and God has blessed. And when he does, God does protect. God does watch over us. God heals us. God teaches us. God loves us. God's merciful to us. He'll protect us. And in this spot, because of Satan, he said, you could do anything that you want because I'm going to prove you wrong. He already knew that, okay? So do what you want. And yet God says, because I have moved against him, he still, and to destroy him without cause. To destroy him without cause. That's the final thing that Satan does. Steal, kill, destroy. steal the camels, steal the oxen, steal all that stuff, kill his family, destroy his spirit. That's what he's trying to do. Here we are, chapter 2, verse 4. And Satan answered the Lord and said, skin for skin, yea, all that a man hath will he give for his life. But put forth thy hand now and touch his bone and his flesh, and he will curse thee to thy face. And the Lord said unto Satan, behold, he is in thy hand, but save his life. Again, God told Satan, you will not kill him. Save his life. You do anything you want to him, but you cannot kill him. So, verse 7, chapter 2. So Satan went forth from the presence of the Lord and smote Job with sore boils from the sole of his foot unto the crown, or his head. And he took him a posture to scrape himself withal. And he sat down among the ashes and said to his and said his wife unto him, doest thou still retain thy integrity? Curse God and die. But he said to her, thou speakest as one of the foolish women speaketh. What shall we receive good at the hand of God, and shall we not receive evil? In all of this, did not Job sin with his lips? Job still, after all this, even his wife is telling him, listen, how can you not curse God? God did this. How can you not curse God after he has done this to our kids, after he has done this to you? Look at you, you're covered in boils. You know, our children are dead. We have nothing. Everything has been taken. Everything has been burned. Everything. You know? And she wants to curse God because that's exactly what we do in today's world. That's what we fail on miserably. And yet, here's a man that's had all this done to him. He's not saying a word negative to God. He's not cursing God at all. But all these tragedies have befallen him. And he's even going against his own wife. You're speaking foolishly. So now we get into the arrival of Job's friends. And we have close friends, all of us do. People that we love. People that we trust, people that we ask advice about, people that we admire and that give us comfort. And here they come. Chapter 2, verse 11. Now when Job's three friends heard of all this evil, and understand, they knew evil. This isn't God's work. This is evil. They heard of all this evil that was come upon him. All this evil, and his three friends show up. They knew that. They were coming to their friend after all this happened. Hey, we got to go to our friend. We got to help him. In the military, we have this all the time. We have brothers and sisters that are struggling so much they don't want to live. And yet we either answer the phone at any time of day because we know what that heartache is, what they've been through. Now, see, I was a non-combatant, but I could see and I saw the people mangled, injured, maimed, some of them mentally so bad, talk with them all. My problems seem like nothing compared to their problems. But I will definitely be there and listen to them because I understand. What if you don't answer that phone? You don't take that call? You don't listen? Can that make a difference in whether they choose to live or die? I ask myself that question all the time, so I always answer that phone. I always look to see what my friends post. I always make sure that I have my one good ear out as best as I can. That doesn't mean I have the answers, but I want to show up just as Job's friends showed up, right, wrong, or indifferent. And here we go, back to verse 11. They came, every one of them, from his own place. Eliphaz, Temanite, and Bildad. And understand, my saying these words is hard. And Shuite and Zophar and Namathrite. For they had made an appointment together to come to mourn with him and to comfort him. Right there. They come and they comfort their friend that's gone through and lost everything. And when they lifted up their eyes afar off and knew him not, they lifted up their voice and wept, and they rent every one his mantle, his clothes, and sprinkled dust upon their heads towards heaven. They couldn't even recognize Job because of the boils, the sores, and everything from foot to head, head to toe. So they sat down with him upon the ground 7 days and 7 nights, and none spoke a word unto him. For they saw that his grief was very great. His friends had so much empathy and sympathy. And when you see that, they don't even know what to say. For 7 days they were there, and no one said a word. But Job, having his friends there around him, and their weeping was a comfort for Job for 7 days. Chapter 3, Job's first speech. He finally speaks. After this, opened Job his mouth and cursed this day, not God, but this day. And Job spoke and said, let the day perish wherein I was born. I wish I wasn't born. And let the night in which it was said, there is a man child conceived. Cursed is the day that he felt that he was born, that he should have to live and end up going through all of this. He would rather not have even existed. He would rather not have existed than to see his sons, his daughters die. Everything happened to him the way it did. Let that day be darkness. Let not God regard it from above, neither let the light shine upon it. Let darkness and the shadow of death strain it. Let a cloud dwell upon it. Let the blackness of the day terrify it. As for the night, let darkness seize upon it. Let it not be joined unto the days of the year. Let it not come into the number of months. Lo, let that night be solitary. Let no joyful voice come therein. And he's talking about himself being born. Let them curse it that curse that day. who are ready to rise up their morning. Let the stars of the twilight, therefore, be dark. Let it look for light, but have none. Neither let it see the dawning of the day, because it shut not up the doors of my mother's womb, nor hid the sorrow from my eyes. Why died I not from the womb? Why did I not give up the ghost when I came out of the belly? Why wasn't I stillborn? He's basically saying, why was I even born? I don't even want to be born. I wish I was never born so that I would never have to see this, so my sons and my daughters would never have to go through this. So none of this would ever happen. It would have been better for me never to exist. That's the destroyed part I'm telling you about that Satan does. He's already stolen. He's already killed. This is the part. This is what he's destroyed. He has destroyed Job's spirit. He's made him hurt so bad that he doesn't even want to exist to begin with in the first place. This is a lot of what our veterans have gone through and do go through when they get to the point of this life after they've seen nothing. They've seen the worst that humanity can do to one another. And people in the civilian world see the worst when we see a drunken driver kill 5 members from a family. And maybe that person has had 2 or 3 DUIs before. And yet they're out driving again. And you're wondering, how can this even happen? Or maybe a parent that it was already hard enough to conceive and they got lucky to have a child, and all of a sudden that child is afflicted with cancer. Or the hurricane victims. Imagine them from Idalia. They've worked all their lives. They've worked hard. And then all of a sudden your loved one is lost and your property is destroyed. And there they are standing alone, trying to fight with an insurance company. They're beat down. They're crumbling inside. They're destroyed in their heart and in their minds. Or a child is abducted. This is how Job feels. I'd rather not even be alive to see this. I wish I was never born so that they wouldn't have to go through this and I wouldn't have to be here. I wish I was never going to be in existence. And this is how Job feels. And yet the whole time, he is not blaming God. He's not even pointing himself in that direction. The rest of us, we would be doing it in a heartbeat. This is God's fault. And many ask the question, well, why did God allow Satan to do this? Why? And this is the part that, as we continue on, we're going to see. Here we are. And we are still on chapter 3, verse 13. For now, should I have lain still and been quiet? Should I have slept, then I had been at rest? With kings and counselors of the earth, which built desolate places for themselves, or with princes that had gold, who filled their houses with silver, or as a hidden untimely birth, I had not been as infants, which never saw light. There the wicked cease from troubling, and there the weary be at rest. He knows there's wicked people in the world. And they're living this luxurious life. They're not focused on God. They're focused on worldly things. I have this treasure and this treasure. I have this. I have that. Listen, they're worshiping Asher poles and Baal and other idols and all these things. They're not being punished at all, okay? And they're living this life, you know, in grandeur. And yet, Job, who fears God, who loves God so much and loves his children so much and has love for everything, has all this taken away. And he feels, why? Why is this happening? But he's not cursing God. There were, verse 18, there the prisoners rest together. They hear not the voice of the oppressor. The small and the great are there, and the servant is free from his master. Wherefore is light given to him that is in misery, and the life unto the bitter in soul, which long for death, but it cometh not, and dig for it more than hid treasures. He is so distraught. He longs for death. And yet, it's hid from him. And people in this world, they'll dig for treasure. You know, we don't care. And they worry more about that than the other. Which rejoice exceedingly and are glad when they can find the grave. Why is light given to a man whose way is hid and whom God hath hedged in? For my sighing cometh before I eat, and my roarings are poured out like the waters. For the thing which I greatly feared is come upon me, and that which I was afraid of is come unto me. See, he feared God so much and loved God so much. He always feared a bad day would come, you know. This is not what he wanted. And he says, verse 26, I was not in safety, neither had I rest, neither was I quiet. Yet trouble came. And this is the first thing that Job said. But nowhere in there did he curse at any time God. He just wished, I wish I was never alive to see this. And why is this right when all these other people can do all these things and they live these unjust lives and I used a just life and for whatever reason, I've come to the conclusion that I've angered God. And we're going to get into this last chapter here for tonight. And we'll come back to it again next week. Eliphaz believes the innocent do not suffer. Chapter 4. Then Eliphaz, the Temanite, answered and said, if we essay to commune with thee, wilt thou be grieved? But who can withhold himself from speaking? Behold, thou hast instructed many, and thou hast strengthened the weak hands. Thy words have upholden him that was falling, and thou hast strengthened the feeble knees. But now it is come upon thee, and thou faintest. It touches thee, and thou art troubled. Is not this thy fear, thy confidence, thy hope, and thy uprightness of ways? Remember, I pray thee, whoever perished being innocent, or who were the righteous cut off. So now, one of his friends, which we're going to learn, is sitting here telling him, You must have done something wrong. Yes, you've done all these great things. You've helped people. You've instructed many. You've strengthened people's hands or hopes and everything else. But now this has come upon you and you faintest. It touched you. And now you're troubled. But at the same time, since when are the just punished? Why are the just punished? Whoever perished being innocent? Or where were the righteous cut off? So he's come to this conclusion that, hey, you did something wrong. And he goes on, verse 8, even if I have seen they that plow iniquity and sow wickedness reap the same. By the blast of God they perish, and by the breath of his nostrils are they consumed. And we're going to stop right there, and we'll come back to verse 10, chapter 4, next week. But his friend is basically telling him, hey, listen, man, you did something wrong. God's not going to do this to you if you're doing good things. You erred. You sinned. You made a mistake. Somewhere you did something that offended Christ God. And that's what he's telling Job. And these are all God-fearing men, God-fearing friends. After all, they all came to him to comfort him. They came to him to be there with him. And now they're trying to figure out, okay, wow, this is a lot that's happened here. What in the world did you possibly do that offended God this way? And that's how we live our lives today. Because the just are afflicted. If we think not, then tell me what Christ did wrong. And we don't look at it that way. We think we're just all the time. We're humans. We're so arrogant that we think that we're right all the time. And I can tell you 90% of my life, I was wrong. So before you end your day, you end your Sunday, God's day, it's hard for us to look into the mirror and to ask ourselves, what changes a man? What does it take? Not what the other person did. It's easy to play the blame game. But what did I do to contribute to the demise that I've gone through? What was my role, my part? And you know, the funny thing was, you expect the mirror to look back and answer you. You know what? Came to the conclusion, it was a lot I did. A lot of mistakes. A lot of hurt that I caused other people. And now, learning how to make an atonement for that. But I hope that you join me next week, and we'll be right back here again, Life Walk with Christ God. And we are on chapter 4, verse 10. So I hope you join me again next week, folks. Thank you for tuning in to the Trim Radio Network. Up next, Stu Scheer, Money and Change is coming up next. Stay tuned. That's coming on at, well, in just about a half an hour, 7 o'clock. And we haven't seen Stu in a while due to hurricane storms and everything else. But you know what? He will be here tonight, and we will see you then. Thank you for joining us. And I hope and I pray I make your day a little better.